Welcome back to the Better Divorce Podcast. I am your host, Paulette Rico, and I'm here to guide you through the storm of divorce into much calmer waters. So hold tight. Whether you're contemplating divorce, in the thick of it, or just rebuilding post-divorce, I've got you covered. Each episode, we'll tackle the tough topics, share resilient stories, and offer practical, helpful advice to help you navigate with confidence wisely. Remember, you're not alone. I've been there, and so have millions of others. And your brighter future awaits, I promise. Ready to turn a tough time into a time of growth? I know you are. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you find this content helpful, please share it with others who might benefit. Now, let's dive into today's topic. See you soon. I'm hosting a retreat in Belize. Some of you may know, but I used to live there. And Belize is a melting pot of culture that carries over into the food, the music, and the fun. It is the best of both vibes, from jungles to ground you and beaches to heal and soothe. I lived there for many years and go back and forth between there and Atlanta because I can't get enough. My co-host, Tierra, visited me and didn't want to leave either. No one does. This is paradise, folks. My co-host, Tierra, and I chatted about the perfect all-inclusive location for you ladies that are going through a pivot in your life and need to reset, renew, and rebuild, and we nailed it. We kick off with a three-day adventure in the luxurious eco-resort Copal Tree in the southern Belize jungle, followed by three luxurious days on Thatch Cay Island, a private island over water, oceanfront oasis in the turquoise Caribbean along the Belize Barrier Reef. Whether you're going through or just coming out of a divorce, especially with a narcissist, a career change, or you just want to get back to the parts of you that you haven't seen in a while, we are talking to you. Make note, May 4th to the 10th, 2024, and start packing. Space is very limited on the private island and in the jungle. Be sure to act now. We have a passion for leading truly transformational healing events, from heart-opening, accessible guided meditations to connection-based life-changing tools and practices. We curate each moment with care and compassion to ensure every lady is taken care of from the initial registration to the final namaste. It's better in Belize. Welcome back, everybody. Today is a special episode as we continue Domestic Violence Awareness Month. This is the Better Divorce Podcast. I'm Paulette Rigo, and I want to introduce you to my special guest today, who also happens to be a vetted professional member of the Divorce Coalition. Her name is Leah Hadley. We met just a while ago as being members of the Divorce Coalition. Let me tell you a little bit about Leah, because you're going to want to tune in. Get your notebook, people. Leah founded the Great Lakes Divorce Financial Solutions LLC business because she's a certified divorce financial analyst. She's an accredited financial counselor and is committed to providing compassionate financial guidance through divorce. And Lord knows we all need that. She will tell you that she had many challenges in financial times in her adult life. Number one, adopting siblings in a group of three. We're going to have to talk about that a little bit. Getting divorced herself. Join the club, Leah. It's a big club. Get to the back of the line. And building a business from the ground up, to name a few. Yes, there have been a few times in her life, as all of ours, when her ability to hunt down appropriate resources, whatever you need, and careful financial planning, not all of us are very good at that, but she is, with critical
to creating the piece that she needed. She's a former investment analyst and sought-after speaker. Leah, again, is the founder of the Great Lakes Divorce Financial Solutions, LLC, and Great Lakes Investment Management. She uses her knowledge and more than 15 years of experience to help clients make intentional financial decisions. Leah, where were you 20 years ago?
I get that question a lot.
I do too. Where was I? I didn't even know myself,
right,
being able to help anyone. So let's jump into what it is you specifically do with people. I really want to dig in. But the reason we're doing this special month of October is really about abuse. And seeing that your expertise is about finances, not mine, Lord knows it's not mine, Leah. It is yours. Let's dig in. Let's define that. So what is financial abuse? Just so everybody knows and has a definition of that. What is it?
Yeah, it's such an important question because it actually shows up in relationships in so many different ways. So I'm so glad that we're talking about it because I just really want to bring awareness to this because a lot of times people are experiencing it and they don't even realize they're experiencing it. So I would say the four most common ways we see it are going to be, first and foremost, just not having access to money, maybe being put on a very limited allowance, not having access to bank accounts, that, you know, restricting access to the finances in general, very common. The next one that people often don't think about, but it's limiting their ability to grow in their career or even hold a job. And so, you know, creating barriers to being able to keep a job or being able to grow in their career. And so that certainly limits their ability to create income for themselves. One more common that people do kind of think about is taking on debt in somebody else's name. And unfortunately, I just have a very ugly case that just crossed my desk where there were hundreds of thousands of dollars taken out in debt in this person's name by their spouse that they had no knowledge of. And unfortunately, we do see this come up in divorce cases where there's just no knowledge. And then the last one is that hiding assets that people often talk about, where sometimes there are more assets than people realize. It could be signing your spouse's name on something. It could be just withholding information about investments or assets. But those are the most common ways that we see it playing out in relationships. All different dynamics at play there, but all examples of financial abuse.
You are so succinct in that. So no access or little access to money, right? I mean, they might have a little bit of cash in their pocket here and there for, I don't know, walking around money, but they don't have a credit card or access to funds or even like buying decision-making abilities, right? They're not able to make purchases. I mean, maybe coffee or, you know, pizza for the kids or something like that, but they don't really have independence financially in the relationship.
Correct.
Okay, she's nodding. If you're listening to the audio, she's nodding. limited in growth and career. I've not heard that one. I've heard holding a career. Ooh, I'm getting a little bit of a flashback here where you have a job that has a ceiling, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've got this job or maybe it's a hobby or it's a side gig, right? Or what do we call that? A side hustle? Do we still use that term? And I don't know.
Some people do.
We do. But you're not able to actually flourish or have a thriving career where you become financially independent, where you can invest or spend as you see fit. You feel like you're living in a container, like a box being
correct. And it's all about that control, right? Being in that power dynamic. Right. That person who is the financial abuser having that power and control over that other person's financial independence.
Yeah, I can relate a little bit on a different tier of like a job that I had way back when where I was working for a family business and I was not allowed to get past here. It was, this is your role, you know, this is what you'll make and don't ask questions, you know, right. And 20 years later, I went, I gotta go now. But there was always this feeling of like wanting to grow and I felt inhibited or like held back, you know, and it's a horrible feeling, Leah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, you don't realize it when you're going through it. You're just like, well, I guess that's just the way it is. And maybe that's all I deserve. Horrible feeling.
Yeah. Right.
Number three, taking on debt in someone else's name. I see this a lot too with people. Well, I have the better credit, so I'm going to take out the loan on the car because then the interest rate will be lower. And then you're really just buying your spouse or somebody else, a child or a family member, a car. And now you're taking on the financial burden and responsibility. That's scary.
Well, and that's one thing if they know about it, right? But a lot of times people take on debt and the other person doesn't even know that the debt is being taken in their name. So that's why very important to monitor your credit.
How do they do that, Leah? Because you would think that you would be notified by whomever, but you're not.
Well, it's become easier and easier with people being able to apply for credit cards online, being able to apply for loans online. You know, your spouse certainly has all of your personal information in order to be able to apply for these things. And so a lot of notifications are coming online. So yes, if you're monitoring your credit, in theory, you should be notified. But a lot of people don't monitor their credit. And even, you know, identity theft is a big issue, regardless of whether you are having experiencing financial abuse in your relationship. So important to monitor your credit, regardless of the situation.
So important. And making sure that you have, is it Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax two accounts so that you can kind of, I'm not pretending I know what I'm talking about, but don't look at me, that you're able to monitor it regularly, not just once a year, but you know, you go in there every few months and go, hey, I don't have that credit card. What's that? Right.
Well, and a lot of credit card companies, banks are offering even free credit monitoring services now. Mm-hmm. So you may have access to a program that you're not even utilizing. That's not even going to cost you anything. There are lots of free online services that you can use. Some of them will sell you tons of things if you're using the service, but you just got to be aware of that and, you know, ignore it. But yeah, there's plenty of opportunity to monitor your credit very easily nowadays.
Excellent. And of course, the good old fashioned hiding assets. And we're not all talking about Swiss bank accounts or an account in the Caymans, or although it could be. And with all the drama in the news with, shall we say, hiding money or embezzlement, and oh my goodness, the financial drama right now. It doesn't have to be that, you know, that vivid, right? Or that like flagrant, right? It can be subtle, right? But you know, an account here, an investment here, maybe a 401k you didn't know about, a checking, a savings, a stock portfolio, or even like, I love those little, are they Robinhood or something, like a small little accounts like that. So many divorce mediations I've been, you know, everybody has disclosed all their events or events. Did I say that? Finances, or maybe it's an event, and, you know, and all of a sudden one, but somebody goes, oh, wait, I think I forgot this account, you know, and sometimes it's innocent and there's $250 in it. And, you know, that's not enough money to throw a mediation, you know, a curveball and derail the whole thing. But if it's a substantial amount of money that you're not aware of, it could really, because it's trust. If you don't know, you don't know your partner.
And we see it come up, like there are, you know, certain companies, certain employers where sure there is the sort of main retirement account that maybe somebody does provide the information about during their divorce case, but that same employer may have two additional retirement accounts that they're not disclosing, right? So they've disclosed just enough to feel like, oh, I've checked that box, right, but they haven't provided all of the information, right?
It's part of the picture, just not all of the picture.
Right. Comes up with small businesses a lot of small businesses, certain industries handle a lot of cash. And so a lot of times that doesn't get fully disclosed. And so that's a very common issue that comes up in those divorce cases.
Sure. Mediation with two self-employed people can be daunting.
Yes.
Done it successfully, but it can be a challenge. So, I want to add one to your list of four. In my experience is not really being allowed or encouraged to look at the tax returns mm-hmm. or to be involved in that process. Maybe you have to sign it, or you know, you're like, oh yeah, I'm signing, but you don't really have an opportunity to read it, understand it, and be involved in the putting together it. Now, if it's this big, you probably don't want to be involved in the putting together of it, but you really should sit down and read your tax returns, everyone. If it's a joint, you know, you're signing your name, this is a big problem. So I always say that make sure you're reading your tax returns too.
Yeah, and what I always tell people is if you're not signing your tax return every year and your tax return is getting filed every year, somebody else is electronically signing it for you. Somebody else is signing it for you. Right. And so that's a problem. That's a red flag if nobody's asking you to sign your tax return every single year. And if that is a time where there is tension, if you are asking questions, if you're not sure what something means on the tax return and that creates an issue, that's a red flag for you. If you're asking questions and you're not getting a positive response, you're getting, you know, a lot of tension, conflict around those questions, that's a big red flag that there's a problem.
Yeah. If you hear, I don't know, I can't remember, I'll have to check, I'm not sure, all that kind of ambiguous response, it's probably a purple flag. Red, right? Okay, so now that we've defined what financial abuse, I like to use the word control too, because that typically feels like you have a leash on, right? Mm-hmm. Let me think, you've got a new puppy and you know it's gonna run across the street and get hit by a truck. That wouldn't be abuse. You're controlling the animal. So with the marriage, it's different. You know, we're not treating each other like an animal. We're in this together collectively. We're in a collaboration. Marriage isn't just an arrangement or an obligation where you just do what you're told. You're supposed to both feel like members of a relationship that are able to equally contribute in every way, shape, and form. And there's no, well, don't ask questions, none of your business. So Leah's so right. You know, if you ask a question and you're curious about something and your spouse isn't willing to have a conversation, maybe not at that exact moment in time, you know, if you're at the ball game with the kids, maybe that isn't the time to start whipping out the spreadsheets and all, but you should be able to have that conversation. And this leads to one of the problems in divorce, where how financial abuse can affect divorce. You can see how if you're in the dark or you're experiencing any of these things, how it might start to make the divorce more complicated. So let's get into that topic a little bit now that we've kind of defined it with your expertise, how financial abuse can affect a divorce.
Yeah, so it affects it on multiple levels. First and foremost, a lot of times people who have experienced financial abuse don't have all the information or have very limited information to even start with. And so a lot of times, you know, I work with people who really want to be very financially prepared to go through the divorce process in order to get the best possible outcome. But how do you even begin to financially prepare if you don't have that information, right? And so we really need to collaborate with attorneys and really, and a lot of these cases have to do a lot more in terms of subpoenaing records because they're not willingly disclosing them. And so there's a lot more back and forth. There's a lot more legal expense associated just with getting the information in order to have enough information to start negotiations. So that is a huge issue in and of itself. But the other bigger piece, I would say, if we just separate from the divorce process, is a lot of people who have experienced financial abuse, there's a lot of messaging that they've heard during the marriage. And a lot of times that's, you're not good with money, you know, you don't know what you're doing, you know, whatever that messaging is. And so here they are entering into this process with very limited information, sometimes decades of negative messaging around money. And it can just feel incredibly overwhelming to even reach out to a professional like myself to help walk through this process because they feel, in a lot of cases, a lot of shame around the situation that they are in. And I think that is so unfortunate because there are people like myself who can really help you to get a better outcome, but it has to be overcoming that obstacle of reaching out and saying, this is where I'm at right now. I'm not sure what the next step is. How do I get the information in order to be able to make good, clear decisions so I have financial security going forward? And even to know that you deserve financial security going forward, that you absolutely are capable of managing money. Nobody's born knowing how to manage money well. It is a skill that is learned. And so regardless of how old you are, you can absolutely learn to manage your money. But it may take time to unpack some of that messaging if you have been hearing it for many, many years. And even maybe you even saw it in your parents' marriage growing up, that, you know, maybe one of your parents was the one who was the only one who had access to financial information and the other one didn't. And so this is all you've ever seen. You have to overcome some of that before you can really get into the numbers and start to really manage your own money and develop the skills that you need.
Right. Because when you are in the dark and you're not aware of your finances, you're at a disadvantage.
Right.
And you have to level the playing field. We're not looking to do this.
Right.
I know you're listening. You don't know what I'm doing. I'm having my little hands be like a seesaw. But you know, if they have the upper hand, they have access, knowledge of the finances, where it's coming from, where it's going, where it's kept, and you have zero knowledge of that. And that could also be investment accounts, as well as things like life insurance, annuities, health insurance policies. I mean, just normal day-to-day knowledge. The days of being the ignorant spouse where you put your driver's license and a credit card and 20 bucks in your wallet are over. You have to be knowledgeable and get involved and have at least monthly meetings about what, how much money they made that month, how much money you made that month, assuming both are employed, what the budget is. Are they over budget? Are they under budget? What are they going to do to catch up and make up the difference? Is that extra going into savings? Is it going towards paying whatever? Versus living in this Disney world, forgive me, Disney, you know, this fantasy world, right? Of, everything will just be fine. Because you can't really trust your spouse to do the right thing. Now, if I have to say, there are those few marriages where one of the spouses just doesn't want to be involved. Don't bother me. I'm not interested. I trust you. And that sounds great. But what happens when the marriage, or if the marriage starts to deteriorate?
That person passes away, it is the worst time to be learning about your money. So you're dealing with that grief.
Yeah. Here you are trying to mourn the loss of your dear spouse and heal from that. And that takes a long time. And you're just trying to figure out how to pay the groceries because you don't know, you know, where the money is. It's, and then you try to call the bank and they're like, well, you're not an authorized user and you don't know the login and password, darling. So we can't help you. You know, I tried to call the IRS today to get a copy of my SS4 number. It's just an EIN number. And oh my Lord, it was like a long, we had to do the face identification thing. It's called ID me. And ooh, you'd think I worked at the Pentagon or something. So, and it's all good. Like, we want it. Identity theft is real.
Yeah,
but absolutely. Got to be involved, right? So we kind of talked about that a little bit. We know what financial abuse looks like. We know how it could be a problem. So let's switch to a little bit more of the positive before everybody's ready to jump off the sidewalk here. What are some specific things that a person can do if they're finding this financial concern and worry keeping them up at night? Like, are there techniques or things that they can do to deal with it?
Yeah, I always encourage people to get very, very clear about specifically what are they worried about. Sometimes people do have general information about their financial situation. I was meeting with a woman recently who, we were looking at her finances. She's considering maybe going through a divorce. Her husband has kind of a significant substance abuse that she's very concerned about any liability that she might experience based on his actions. And we were looking at the finances, and this has really been something that's been really weighing on her. And as we walk through the numbers, She's gonna be just fine if she decides to go forward with a divorce. But this is something that she has literally just been carrying around with her. Now, that's not always the outcome of that analysis. Let me be clear. Everybody's financial situation is unique, but identifying specifically what that worry is, a lot of times, if we can get really clear, we can address it. We can look at, in terms of financial analysis, sometimes people are very worried about financial security, right? And so what do we look at? We look at what, how much do you have in savings? How do we increase what you have in savings? So that way, if something comes up, you do have the funds set aside to deal with it, right? Sometimes people are just literally worried, how am I going to pay the bills from month to month? Well, how can you be very proactive in taking control over your income? What steps can you take in order to make sure that you have the income to support not only your current savings, your long-term investments, but also making sure those day-to-day bills are getting paid and taken care of without any problem? When we know what the worry is, and it's not just these thoughts that are whirling around in our brain, but we can get clear, we can create a plan around them. And so I encourage people to just write it all down, get as clear as we possibly can about what the actual worry is, and then let's address it.
Perfect. Identifying the fear specifically.
Correct.
Is it so overwhelming, like catastrophe, that you feel like you're going to be living under a bridge, you have to file for bankruptcy, really, going down this dark path all the way to something just like a minor fear, that everybody's going to have their degrees of fear of,
Right.
based on your experience as a child. And
Right.
maybe you had another relationship where there was financial secrecy or financial control that's left a lot of habituated patterns or imprints of fear. And also the fear of those lessons or messages, as we alluded to earlier, of, oh, you'll just spend it all. You're no good at investing. You don't know anything. You hear those messages and it starts to erode on your self-confidence and it makes a lasting imprint.
Absolutely.
So, what are a few steps that a victim, a person that is experienced financial abuse, can take to increase their confidence so that they can start to build their, I like to call them courage muscles? You can go to the gym and make your muscles bigger. Mine are not very big. It's this muscle, right? Resiliency, strength, courage, vitality that allows you to get up in the morning and say, I got this. Even if you don't got it, you still have to have that self-confidence. And moving through divorce when you're not in the know is exhausting. In fact, it is the reason I founded, became the CEO of Better Divorce Academy. If you don't know what the heck that is and you just happen to find me, I wear three hats. I'm a credentialed private mediator that is committed to working with couples who are committed to avoiding the litigation process. It's private early mediation where no one's suing anybody. Nobody's the plaintiff, nobody's the defendant. You're not embroiled in a lawsuit. You're able to control the situation prior to all of that. Not everybody can do that. It does take two to tango. But if you're working with a neutral party like myself that can facilitate a conversation with both parties, yes, there has to be disclosure, right? How can you mediate with someone when they're not being honest and truthful about the division of marital assets and debt too? It isn't just the money. So, and I'm also the certified divorce coach that works with one of the parties when you can't do that scenario, because not everyone can. It's lovely, it's fabulous, it's successful, it's faster, it's cheaper, it's more pleasurable, it's a more optimal experience. But there are those cases where people have to litigate. That's okay. Stay tight. I got you. We're not going to throw in the towel here. We're going to hang in there. We're going to work with professionals like Leah, get all of our financials in order. You can control what you can control. And working with one of the parties to help them from confusion to conclusion, step by step, by step by step through the entire divorce so that they feel heard and seen and validated, and they feel wise, educated, prepared. They're able to deal with stress. They have the right professionals, whether that's one or a lot. Everybody's different. And the third hat is I'm the director of coaching and case management for Divorce Right. Divorce Right is a corporate solution to divorce, whereas Better Divorce Academy is a personal solution to divorce. And if you own a business and you have employees, whether that's 10, 100, 1,000, or your Amazon, a certain number of your employees every year, year after year after year, will divorce. That's just a fact. I'm not, you know, encouraging your employees to get divorced, everyone, deep breath, but it is a fact. So do you know that if you own a business, your employees will lose an average of 43% productivity for the duration of their divorce? And that's about 3 to 5 years. Well, that's a lot of money that you're going to lose if half of their, or almost half of their salary isn't being productive. They come in late. They leave early. They stare at their computer like they're, you know, I don't know, foaming at the mouth. Their eyes are rolling back in their head. They're either crying with mascara running down their face, or they're just stoic and pretending they're fine and everything's great. You can tell that something's wrong, right? They're just preoccupied, right, Leah? They're just like, what's going on?
Oh, yeah.
So we come in and train the HR departments in divorce sensitivity. I don't have anything to do with that part of Divorce Right. Not my idea of a good time. We have experts that are exceptional at training HR departments. I then am matched with the employees after that's all happened, where I assess their case personally, privately, confidentially, and they receive a book, a workbook, an online course, and group coaching confidentially through their employer. I facilitate that. And if need be, I match them with one of our 60 divorce coaches. Everybody's case is different. So Better Divorce Academy and Divorce Right, whether you can privately mediate, you've got to litigate, or you own a business, or you're an employee, I got you covered. Now, I know what I do well, and I know what I don't do well. And I always pull in from my Rolodex experts that know way more than me. Leah happens to be one of them. And we both are very committed to being a member of the Divorce Coalition because of our passion for educating and bringing awareness and shining a light on this control. And so much of the time, financial abuse is swept under the rug. No more. Not going to happen on our watch.
That's right.
Yeah. So that's why we're here. That was a summary. I get asked that a lot. What do you do, Paulette? So let's go back to the important considerations when negotiating your divorce settlement to ensure your financial security. You know what it is. You're getting your ducks in the row. You're getting the right team of professionals. You've built your courage muscles. Maybe you still need to work on that, just like you have to brush your teeth every day. You've got to work out. It isn't something you do once and you're like, oh, I'll never have to do that again. But now you're in the midst of it and you really have to negotiate a settlement in mediation and even in litigation where you are, you know, leveraging your strategy of what would be the equitable division, particularly when your spouse is perhaps being high conflict, difficult. How many more words should we add to that list? Yeah, a lot of them, right? So let's talk about those considerations. With all of your expertise, what do you tell people to do?
Well, first and foremost, it's important to keep an open mind. And I know that may sound strange, but it is often when somebody becomes very focused on a particular outcome, yeah, that allows for the conflict to become bigger than necessary because they are so focused on a particular topic or a particular interest that they have, especially if there's this dynamic of abuse, that person who has been manipulative in the marriage can use that to manipulate you. So let's just use, and this comes up so often, the marital home. I say that I absolutely 100% want to stay in the marital home, and I am not giving that up. When you dig into that particular issue, that other person sees that emotional attachment, sees that attachment, and uses it oftentimes to really manipulate in negotiations. And so first and foremost, I really encourage people to approach the negotiation with an open mind, because there are any number of outcomes that could work well for you. And in fact, a lot of times, some of the issues that people dig in on early on financially are not actually in their best interest. And so when we run numbers and we look at a variety of different scenarios, and recently I've done this for several people, this housing issue has been a big issue for people with the increase in interest rates on mortgages, the increase in home values. There's been a lot going on here with the houses. And so recently we've been doing a lot of analysis for people about what other options might look like, and finding that their cash flow can be so much better when they choose another option. And so especially for, you know, if you're a single mom post-divorce and you're having kids at home, having an improved cash flow situation of $500, $1,000, $2,000 a month can just make your whole life so much more comfortable. And so really keeping an open mind to possibility, to looking at a variety of different scenarios, a variety of different outcomes, is really important, just in even how you approach the negotiation before we even start to look at what the numbers are or what the actual individual assets or debts are. From there, it's really important. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to reiterate that phrase, keep an open mind. I see when people, both parties collectively or either or, it's always one or the other, a little tug of war going on, where they become so attached to the outcome, right?
Right.
There were many years when I was teaching yoga. If you don't know me, I'm a bit of a woo-woo. I was a birth doula, lactation consultant, yoga teacher, trainer, a macrobiotic cook, and Ayurvedic consultant. I've done a lot of crazy things. Yes, I do hang out in courtrooms a lot, but I understand the psychological, mental, emotional part of attachment, right? There's this, it's an identification, particularly with mothers and Christmas trees and, you know, menorahs. That's not a religious thing, but, you know, here it is, Yom Kippur, right? So, but to sheetrock. Sheetrock, people, you know, plywood, 2x4s, toilets, like, okay, I get it. I lived in the same house from birth to 17 and then got married at 22. I know that's a long story. So almost 23. And then lived in the same marital home for 17 years. So here I was, 40 something. And I had only pretty much lived in two houses. Well, three, because we had a summer house, but two areas. That's it, two. And that's not a lot for 40 something years, right? And the idea now, since then, I have lived in 12, I think. I've lost track. It's liberating. And if you had told me, Leah, back in that, when I started my divorce, that I would have all those, like, that was so scary, right? What do you mean I'm going to move to an apartment there and then an apartment there and then a house there and then a condo there? And then I could keep going. I'd be like terrified, right? But you have to release your attachment to the outcome to allow the power of grace to work its magic. You just don't know what's going to happen. You have to trust and have faith. If you can afford the house, great, keep it. If you can't, you probably shouldn't. Yeah, it's hard though, right? This feeling of fear. So lastly, when it comes to common financial mistakes people make post-divorce that could cost them thousands, what do you see of, you know, they're divorced, they've got the settlement, or they're paying alimony or whatever it is. You know, every situation is different. What are some, on your expertise, what are some common mistakes that you see people making?
Yeah. So here's the thing, especially for those who have experienced financial abuse in the marriage, the divorce process can feel overwhelming. It can be exhausting. And by the time you have your settlement in hand, for a lot of people, you are done. Well, your attorney is done. But assets still need to be retitled. Accounts still need to be transferred. There are still loose ends that need to be taken care of. And I have just been amazed in doing this work by how many people don't take care of actually settling the assets that were agreed upon. As soon as you possibly can to your actual divorce, get that stuff taken care of. I know some of the paperwork alone for people who have experienced financial abuse can just be like this huge mountain for a lot of people. I get it. I've been there. I've, you know, sat with clients as they've cried through the paperwork, and I'll sit with you if you need to cry through the paperwork. But it's real, and it's about really owning your financial independence going forward. And it's so important that these things are taken care of. In some cases, depending on how agreements are written, you are literally missing out on tens of thousands. I just saw a case that was $100,000 somebody missed out on based on how the agreement was written and when the actual asset distribution happened. So there are some very real financial consequences to not taking care of these things. And so the sooner you get it done, the better. But even with that said, we just took care of a case that settled 13 years ago, did require a lot of analysis in order to be able to get those assets retitled and transferred, and some work with the courts as well. But even if you're one of those people who are like, oh, I know I should have done it, and now I just don't know what to do, reach out, we'll help you figure it out. Because it really is so important that you get that stuff taken care of. You know, I'm sure if you talk to estate planning attorneys, they'll tell you about probate cases where they've had to deal with situations, you know, where the person passed away and the assets were never retitled, and just trying to get the funds can just be very complicated and difficult. And so that is a big issue. And I had no idea how big an issue it is, but it's really, really important that there's nobody at that stage in the divorce, when the divorce is final, that is really like holding your hand, unless you have somebody like me who's involved during the case. And then we kind of see you through to the, you know, making sure everything gets done, but making sure that all of the financial assets are actually retitled, transferred, all of those things are completed. And that is just, I mean, I can't tell you how many thousands of dollars I've seen people lose out on as a result of that.
And if that's scary, start with something super small. If you're female and you want to change your name, I guess guys can change your name too. You start with that. Go down to the Social Security office and say that you just got recently divorced and you would like to go back and retain your maiden name. Bring in your birth certificate, any other documentation showing that that was your original name. And get one small little win. Once you get your new Social Security card with your new name, you're like, oh, like I accomplished something, right? And then build on that. Go down to the Department of Motor Vehicles and change your driver's license. And then you're like, I got two fancy cards. Check, you know, and then go down to the, go get a new passport. And, you know, wait for it to expire, although sometimes traveling can be a problem if all the documents don't line up with the same name. So Social Security card, driver's license, passport, checking account. And if you've got a few little wins, you're like, what's a big financial statement? I can do that, right? And it does help if you have a financial planner, a CPA, or some sort of expert that can really help you with that. It took me a while to change everything. So yes. So how do people find you? I do want to make sure that we leave everyone with this optimistic note too. Don't want this to sound all doom and gloom, that overcoming financial abuse is not a distant hope or a dream. It is achievable. This is our message and why Leah is here with me today. And Leah also offers workshops. One of them she does is actually called Divorce Dilemma. Should I stay in the marital home? Perfect segue.
So yeah, that's been a popular one lately.
You can go to her website, Great Lakes dfs.com. Again, dfs.com/ should you stay in the marital home? And there's hyphens. It's going to be in the show notes, so don't panic. I think if you're in that place where you're confused, should I or shouldn't I, whether that's should I or shouldn't I get divorced, should I or shouldn't I stay in the marital home, whatever your confusion is, don't go it alone. I had no idea what I was doing many years ago, and I made so many mistakes. Don't let those mistakes be yours. Let my wisdom and Leah's wisdom save you, your mind, your blouse, your shirt, and your sanity. So save money, save time, and work with the experts that can get you there with wisdom and grace and dignity. And what's the best way for people to contact you, Leah?
You can contact me right through the website, and I am also all over social media. So on Instagram, it's Watch Her Thrive. So you can direct message me right through Instagram.
Perfect. All right, everybody. Well, that's a direct hit segue to what I used to call this podcast, right? Keep thriving. Watch her thrive, everyone. Keep doing it. I'm watching you.
Thanks for joining me today. If you were inspired by today's episode, please share it with a friend or a loved one. My hope is you feel empowered to take some action, no matter how big or small. Action that allows you to step out of the chaos and thrive on your own terms. If this podcast added any value to your day, please review it on iTunes, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Until next time. Keep thriving in the chaos.